Normally, we don't have newsmakers here on South Beach Sessions. We just wander around with interesting people talking about interesting things. But we've got one this week. This guy, you may have noticed, you may have heard, usually politics doesn't quite end up near the field. Gun control conversations don't end up this near the field. But after a brutal weekend in America, after two in one day mass shootings, Alejandro Bedoya was fed up. He was in Washington. He was near Congress. And this sound is courtesy of FS1. After he scored a goal, emotional and angry, he ran over to the corner and grabbed a microphone on a television mic that was on the corner of the field.
Fabian left it. Bedoya shot off the post and in. And the Union take the early lead. In the third minute, the captain comes up with a very big goal.
Hey, Congress, do something now. End gun violence. Let's go.
So that echoed in a way that reached people because a lot of people felt helpless. A lot of people felt like they wanted to scream. And Alejandro Bedoya, who grew up here in South Florida, has a similar story to a lot of people in South Florida, has been shaped by South Florida. We get a chance to talk to him here about the events of this weekend, why he did what he did, how he did it, and what he wants to accomplish in the future because of having done it. Here he is, Alejandro Bedoya of the Philadelphia Union and a U.S. men's soccer. So over the weekend, we saw someone do something you don't often see, bringing everything from outside the field right to the field. Philadelphia Union soccer player Alejandro Bedoya, he grew up down here around Weston, near the, you know, Parkland shooting, grew up on those fields. And so he was playing in Washington. He scored a goal. He ran to the corner of the field and he grabbed a microphone and he shouted, "Congress in Washington, do something now, end gun violence," after, you know, America was grieving and angry and helpless the day before because there had been two, not one, but two mass shootings. And what's happening in this country isn't happening anywhere else in the world. So Alejandro joins us now with that as introduction. It was brave and it was also angry. You sounded super pissed off. You just scored a goal and it was something that I thought was aggressive because you spoke for a lot of people in the helplessness of it. So thank you for joining us, Alejandro. And just tell me, take us through what it is that you were feeling there and what it is that you were doing.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. Thanks for having me. Me and my friends growing up in South Florida, we were big fans of yours, so appreciate everything you're doing. Like you said, it was just kind of like a moment of rage, a spur-of-the-moment thing. I didn't even plan this, nothing. That statement that I made, which is politically nonpartisan, it's just a sentiment that I shared with everybody that I think most of us have the same feelings about and felt the same way. I think you could just hear it in my voice when it just came out. Just kind of like, you know, that whole do something, like, let's go. Like, we need to come together, the United States of America, all of us, and just do something. Because doing nothing is obviously not working. And like you mentioned, we're the only civilized nation where this type of gun violence, these mass shootings are occurring. Being in D.C., you know, a mile away from Capitol Hill or wherever, I said what I said, I did what I did. And I encouraged Congress. Congress is the House and the Senate, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, wherever you stand, to do something about this. And I believe that there could be more laws in place that can help to prevent this stuff from occurring, that can save some lives, that can limit this. There's no solution that is going to 100%, you know, stop violence, stop gun violence. That's just not going to happen. But if we can, you know, save some lives and limit these things from happening in the future, I think we can all agree on that. We can get together and work on some solution.
And so as you're doing it, are you thinking at all about what the ramifications might be and what were the ramifications? I imagine you were largely celebrated. There's not going to be a lot of blowback. There's not going to be any punishment. The way you're articulating it, it's not political. You're just asking for help. You're feeling helpless and asking for help.
Exactly how I see it. I don't see anything of that being controversial, or like you said, it's something that can be bipartisan agreed on. But I just kind of felt helpless as a father, as a concerned citizen of the country I live in. it was just something that just hit me in the head. You know, I mentioned to numerous outlets already, you know, before I take the field, I always, you know, sit in my chair and bow down and pray. And I thank God for his blessings. I thank God for the family's giving me the health. I hope he can keep me free from injury and, you know, help us to victory. And then, you know, I grieved with the victims and I prayed for their healing. And as we get out, we sing the national anthem, we stand. And while the national anthem is going, I'm still actually, you know, I close my eyes most of the time and still pray to God to keep me healthy and that everything goes well. And, you know, for the victims again, everything was fresh in my mind, you know. I happened to score in the second, third minute of the game. So right off the bat, pretty much everything's still in my mind. I actually ran into that corner to celebrate because in the previous month, we had already played DC United in a cup match. And that's where our traveling fans were. That's where the Philadelphia fans were, in that corner where I celebrated. Except this time, and this, they weren't there. So I made eye contact with actually Osinho's mother, who I saw was the only one jumping up and down, Philly fan. And went over to hug her. I looked over, you know, while I'm hugging my teammates are celebrating with me. I looked over to the corner, and this is what it was like. God just put the tool, the microphone in front of me, my eyesight, and just said, go over there, do something. And what came out of my mouth was just what I came out of, you know. It was brief. It was obviously powerful. And, you know, my voice was heard. I had a platform. I didn't know the microphone was on. You know, it could have been like a NFL films where you're watching and they always have the guys mic'd up, but things around the field, and they play these audio sound bites back when you're watching it. Or, you know, on live telecast, you know, they could have easily, it's on a 5-second, 7-second delay, maybe. They could have bleeped that out or panned to another shot of the field, but it was heard around the nation and around the world now. And, you know, that's my voice was heard. I continue the conversation, hopefully, and I hope it doesn't end because, you know, the 48-hour news cycle. But I just trying to do my part, as like I said, like a father, as a concerned citizen, to you know.
Well, you've mentioned a father. You've mentioned a father a couple of times, if I may, Alejandro. And so I got to imagine that you were touched, moved, angry, hurt when this happened at Stoneman Douglas on fields that you played on. And so it's made all the angrier that you're experiencing it again, because you want that to be the last time anyone is dealing with that. But as a father, can you explain to us the as a father there? Because I imagine Stoneman Douglas scared the hell out of you like it scares everybody.
Yes, it did. It did indeed. You know, I saw, you know, to God mentioned yesterday, he lives like 100 yards from Parkman, right, from the school. This is something that hit close to our home, to our community down there in South Florida. I played at those fields many times growing up, and I had friends that attended that school. I have a teammate here in the Philadelphia Union who lost one of his best friends in that shooting. So, yes, it was, you know, whether it's directly or indirectly, this stuff impacts a lot of people. And for me, that Douglas shooting did impact me a lot, you know. I was able to show support after that in a game where I was able to, I wore a shirt that said MSD Strong. You know, from afar, all I can do is pray for the family's healing and offer condolences. And then, you know, this type of stuff, to try to get stuff done in Congress and for other people to help one another, you know. I'm proud to see how those Parkland students, you know, became kind of the activists in leading the charge to try to, you know, end this type of gun violence, because this doesn't happen anywhere else around the world. As a concerned father, you said, I'm dropping my kids off at school here in Philly. And it's been two times now where I've gotten text messages where the school has said, we're on lockdown because there's a shooter nearby, shooting happened nearby. I mean, come on, this is crazy that we're, it's very touching. You know, it's tough to talk about sometimes, but yeah, I'm walking my kids to school, and I can't, like I mentioned after my post-game interview, I know for a fact I'm not the only person around that's always looking for some sort of exit strategy, looking over their shoulder, looking ahead of me, and then, you know, making sure, is this a sketchy person or something? Do I need to, you know, turn the other way or start running? You know, something like that, you know, at big gatherings, at events, at concerts, at, you know, even in, you know, we talk about in a locker room now here, you know, what happens if somebody sneaks into a stadium and just goes nuts, you know, this guy in Dayton. He had a magazine with 100 rounds. You know, all you got to do is just spray everywhere, and you're doing a lot of damage. So,
when did you start to feel that kind of unsafe? Do you remember? Was it, upon becoming a father? Because athletes can feel pretty bulletproof and maybe not unsafe for themselves, but when you see that start happening with children, I would imagine as a father, it is even all the more galling. When did that start for you?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that sentiment. My son is 4 years old now, so I would say within the last 4 years, I've been a lot more sensitive to this stuff. And it's hit me a lot harder, all these things. And my voice, man, I just, like you said, I kind of just shouted that same sentiment that a lot of people are thinking, a lot of Americans are thinking about.
Pissed off because for 4 years, you're not totally sure that when you drop your son off, that it's safe.
Correct. Because we're the only country where this type of stuff is happening frequently, as it is.
Have you heard from anybody with an amount of power that can allow you and help you to have the cause echo beyond just the words of the moment?
I haven't heard from anyone from in D.C. at least, you know, but I have heard from us in Philadelphia City Council, you know, a Republican congressman, that represents us here in Philly. And he was just saying that, you know, great work, great job, and you're doing the right thing. And, you know, others, we all need to step up. So that was good to hear. And then, you know, and then I get other messages, the ones, the more heartbreaking ones that made me realize, you know, that my voice, it was powerful, and that what I did was worth it, was, you know, victims of actual gun violence and these mass shootings. I've received a couple of them that they're still suffering from so much anxiety, but that still have hope and that something can be done to limit these in the future. And that to me, is touching, but at the same time made it worth it that I took a stand, which, like I said, it shouldn't be controversial and it was politically nonpartisan. It was just as a human being first that we can all come together and do something about this.
You mentioned a couple of times here that it only happens here. Why?
I don't know. There's many factors. I've raised, people tell me, oh, well, they're sarcastic about it. Like, oh, you just solved gun violence. And, you know, without any logic argument back to me. But to provide some substance, I really do believe, you know, I've talked with numerous gun owners, numerous law-abiding citizens. I've talked with law enforcement officials, and many have told me they agree that there's no reason why we shouldn't enact more laws to require universal background checks. I was so happy to hear that in our state of Florida, you know, after the Parkland shooting, they kind of the risk protection orders were, you know, it's kind of a red flag law that I talked about. I think that should be something that should be on a federal level. That our government should enact that, you know, if somebody is seeing something, you know, that not right, or somebody has become mentally ill, or, you know, a broken home and they fear for their life, you know, or going through a divorce or something, and they're gun owners and they're not, you don't think they are responsible ones, that we should be able to do something about it. Citizens and law enforcement should work together to confiscate those guns. Or, you know, if there's court order, you know, judges will decide if they're worth handling them. I mean, anybody who has a hit list, you know, like this Dayton shooter, I mean, they're obviously not going to, they shouldn't have guns. I've also brought up other kind of legislation kind of that can be brought forward in terms of magazine capacities. These drum magazine that this guy had 100 rounds. I don't think any civilian needs to have 100 round magazine in their closet. You know, let that, you know, for the licensed, you know, gun range facilities where you can go there and unload. But why have it in the, you know, in your home? Those are just some things that I think that can change, that we can get better on. Obviously, mental health is an issue that we can look further into, but stop stigmatizing it, because we are not the only country that deals with mental health issues. We're the only country that deals with this type of gun violence. So yeah, it's a polarizing topic for a reason, because it's very complex. But,
did you hear anything from the league office?
No, I have not heard anything from the league office. And I know they saw, they named me the player of the week, even though others were more, were on the sporting merit side, at least they were more deserving. But I'm happy that I have the support of my peers. You know, I've heard from numerous players, ex-teammates, players all over this league and from all over the world, really, just in support, and that they, you know, that they felt hurt, through me, they felt represented in what I had to say.
Your manager backed you up pretty immediately. Did you think he would? Did you think? Did you care whether your teammates or manager backed you up or not?
I didn't really care. I didn't realize it was going to get this big, you know. Like I said, I didn't know if the mic was on, if it was going to happen or anything. But I'm not surprised when my coach backed me up. We have a very strong relationship, and I know what he feels about certain stuff. Like I said, this isn't even like about politics. This is, he's a father too. He's walking his kids to school in Philly here too. And, you know, how can you not have this in your mind when on Saturday and Sunday you're waking up and you're seeing this stuff on the news and another, here we go again, more mass shootings. So yeah, we're human beings first. This is something we all feel.
Have you already been turned into a political figure? Are you getting hit as if there's another side when all you're doing here is a call to action? Are you getting hit with much hatred? Are you getting hit with many people who love their guns and want the athlete to just shut up?
I would say 90% has been pretty overwhelmingly supportive. You got the other 5% who maybe disagree that, you know, oh, stick to soccer, no politics in sports, blah, blah, blah. But in a civil manner, you know. And then you have another, like, 5% who are just, you know, nut jobs already and probably are gun owners and probably shouldn't be gun owners because, you know, in my statement, I don't know how you can be argue or be against trying to end gun violence. You get what I'm saying? Like, how was that even a controversy? Like, you either are or you're not. So, yeah, it's just, it's crazy. I never said ban all weapons. I'm not for that. So, or banning guns, but... Yeah, it's, you know, some people, yeah, I don't know, can't think logically or, you know, cling on to their guns more than their word about, you know, kids dying and stuff like that. But that's the problem with our society right now, you know what I mean? And to be a good society, you know, we have a gun culture that is different from any other country. We need to come together, empathize, and realize that it takes a little bit of sacrifice for the betterment of the whole country in order to, you know, improve as a society, not just on gun violence, but as a whole.
What is your family history? What is, how did you get here with your parents being from Colombia? What's the backstory?
Yeah, my parents, my father actually came over on a soccer scholarship from Colombia. And, you know, and my mother were already dating back then. They got married. My father finished his education while playing soccer and became a businessman. He's, you know, always instilled in me, you know, certain morals. And I credit a lot of that to the way we grew up. And, you know, I think what shaped me the way I become an athlete who's, you know, not shy to voice my opinion or be vocal if you followed me on Twitter and stuff like that about certain issues, I think was the fact that after college, I turned pro and went straight to Europe. Over in Europe, I gained this more of a global perspective. I saw how people over there kind of view America, and I got out of America. So I got out of my comfort zone, and I started seeing things for what they are. As great of as a country we are, there's, you know, there's many, many things that we need to do to improve, to get better on. You know, my wife, she's Norwegian. She's from Norway. In Scandinavia, the quality of life is very high. They don't have this type of stuff over there. You know, you're talking about a society where they leave their doors unlocked, where they don't have to really worry about things like this going on. So for her, it was a complete culture shock coming here to the States and Philly. So, you know, just hearing her perspective as well, you know, it shapes you and it molds you in a different way and gets you thinking about different stuff.
So you're running into players all the time. How do they view America? Are they they're probably saying to you, I mean, what the f*** is going on? What is happening in your country, right? Like, just totally confused, and probably you're a little bit embarrassed.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. These are issues that we've talked about sometimes in the locker rooms over there, you know? And even you have to realize, too, I was living in France. I was playing and living in France with the, when those attacks happened, right? At the Bataclan. And that was some scary stuff. And when you read about the whole thing that they were supposed to do, these terrorists, they were supposed to be inside the stadium of a France-Germany game. I was watching that on TV at home in France. And, you know, that type of stuff doesn't happen often there with that type of gun violence that occurred there. So we started talking about the subject. And it, obviously, it's here in the States, it's way different. That was an isolated incident there. And here in the States, it happens. I mean, I don't know. How many mass shootings have we had this year? Over 200, I think I saw a stat.
Yeah, it's more than 250, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It's just absurd. They can't come to grips with that. They don't understand. You know, at least in Europe, people will tell you, they do not understand the gun culture that is here in this country and the obsession with it and why our citizens can't come together to realize that gun violence is a problem. Yes, violence in general is a problem. People are evil. Why can't we all come together to realize that? Yeah, the common denominator in a lot of these issues and a lot of these things when they're happening is that guns, you're able to kill a lot more people in such a quick time frame.
I imagine you grew up around a lot of Cubans, and I know, even though I don't know anything about guns, I've never held a gun in my hand, it's not part of any part of my past, I know that Cubans saw a country filled with civil unrest, not unlike this country right now, is filled with civil unrest. And then Cubans saw the government take away their guns. And once you take away people's guns, all of a sudden the government becomes more powerful. And so a lot of people would argue on behalf of guns who are arguing against big government. What do you say to them?
That I understand that argument as well. You know, people who also, like I said, Cubans, but also the point of Venezuela and see how the people are helpless against the government and things like that. But then there's also another perspective too, like our government has nuclear weapons, our government has drones, our government has fighter jets that can drop missiles or whatever. Our government has bazookas. You know, the Second Amendment doesn't say exactly which guns you can and can't own, but it is an amendment. It can be amended. It can be changed so that it fits the state of our society right now. And I'm not for, like I mentioned earlier, I'm not for banning guns. But if we can just improve measures on making it harder, like how can you be against universal background checks so that it takes maybe a law-abiding gun owner a couple more days to get their gun because we're doing a more comprehensive, stricter background check on somebody that, you know, maybe shouldn't have access to guns or shouldn't have their, you know, be able to own a gun. Or red flag laws. Or, you know, I've talked with numerous, like I said, the group chat from South Florida, half of us are gun owners. And they all agree, like, why would they need a 100-round magazine for? It's fine to have a, you know, 10-round magazine, blah, blah, blah. You shoot, you're fun. You can still defend yourself just fine with that type of stuff. And you're good. You can still go to a gun range facility and unload and do whatever you want. But I just don't see the need for that. And I think that's something that can be something that we can all come together. Like I said, a bipartisan effort that we can agree on to start somewhere. Start there, you know. Nobody's coming for your guns. I'm not coming to take away all your guns. There's plenty of guns that are still readily available. It's just, what can we do to stop these type of stuff? Or at least make it that much harder for a nut job or maniac to do something like this.
I know that I was shaped by my culture sort of freedom foremost in, you know, wanting a microphone and wanting to be able to talk about things like this. Are there ways that your culture, your specific story of your parents growing up in another country, you growing up in this one with all the privileges of this one, you watching at the borders as brown babies are locked in cages, you watching what's happening around America, And seeing that, in what ways has your culture imprinted your need to do things like the thing you did?
Yeah, I would say because, you know, me and you, we come, I wouldn't say similar backgrounds, but, you know, like you said, you're exiled from Cuba.
I'd say it's pretty similar, actually. Like, my father went to Fairleigh Dickinson, right? Didn't you go? You went to Fairleigh Dickinson.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, no, I grew up in Jersey City, like, and then you grow up in Weston, right, and South Florida. I don't know how much you bounced around in South Florida. Were you a struggling Colombian family that bounced around a little bit, or were you able to be in one place?
No, we were able to be in one place. I think after my dad being at work, but similar to maybe, you know, your family coming from Cuba. My father, part of the reason why he left Colombia was also, you know, Colombia, the drug cartels were very violent, and it was a very violent time back then. You know, when we talk about the whole Escobar scenarios going on, so for a lot of Colombians, they were happy to get out of the country to escape that violence. And go find some safety and freedom for their families.
It's a bit of a mind f**k, though, right? Given what our families endured and the sacrifices that they made, the idea that these countries they fled are safer by leaps and bounds than the one that that exiles and immigrants chose.
Oh yeah, absolutely, it is. Because, for example, I was born here in America. You know, I'm lucky to be born here in America. I'm blessed. Others don't have that, you know, and I've seen how my dad and my mom and their families struggle to, you know, to be able to have these opportunities. It's tough to see everything that is going on. And the rhetoric right now in our political climate has just become so divisive that it's incendiary, right? And if you're not really mentally stable, you bite and you take these things as like bait, and, you know, words have consequences. Just like my words, I hope, will continue the conversation and lead to action. You know, other people's words are powerful and can impact somebody deeply. So we just have to, you know, like I said, come together, stop with all the bullshit, name calling, you know, pointing fingers, blame. Just come on, let's work together. We're all Americans. We're all on the same team.
When you say drug cartels and the violence of Colombia, how did that impact your family's history? Like, what has your family told you about why and how they came to be here?
They're just happy that they were able to come here and escape that kind of war zone that was occurring during that time and provide their family with some stability and opportunities. And that's what America stands for. That's America is the land of immigrants, right? Land of opportunity and freedoms. And I feel right now with these types of mass shootings and gun violence, freedoms have become under attack. Because, like I said, I'm not the only one that goes to big gatherings, events, concerts, sporting events, whatever it is, without being a little bit paranoid and looking for some exit strategy, you know?
The U.S. Soccer Federation had this audit, and the U.S. soccer president was talking about the women and equal pay and the numbers seemed to be creative accounting. Do you have an opinion on what is happening there in terms of you guys are being made out to be the overpaid bums? What is your relationship with this women's team that is, you know, this spectacular symbol? Is it a source of tension that every time we point out how great they are, it's to point out that you guys aren't as great?
No, that's not how it is at all. We support the women's, and I'm sure a lot of us have a good relationship with them. I'm not as close with them as I was before. Obviously, I haven't been on the national team in over a year. But the thing that I've said before is anybody can shout equal pay, but it just doesn't work that way because it's a much more complex issue than just saying equal pay and pay them the same. First and foremost, we have different pay structures, completely different pay structures. You know, the men, we only get paid on bonuses, right? So we have to make the team. We have to make the roster. We have to come into training camp in order to get a payment. The women, they don't. They have base salaries of over $100,000 a year plus bonuses. So regardless if they're called in or not, some of the women who are in there, part of the federation, they're getting paid regardless. You know, they get paid even when they're pregnant and can't play, they have benefits that we men don't have. So the compensation structures are completely different. So that's why it's very complex and hard to just, you know, I mean, you could just say, oh, pay them the same bonuses that the men have. But I'm telling you that the women won't agree to that because, you know, like many other people around their jobs, they'd rather have guaranteed compensation, right? So it's a lot. It's a much more complex issue than it's maybe made out to be.
You're entering dangerous waters here, Bedoya. You better be careful because these women are international superstars and everyone's applauding them. And you're coming with an opinion I'm not hearing a whole lot from any of your male counterparts who, you know, you're saying it's complicated. You're applying nuance, but not a whole lot of people are getting close to, hey, settle down with equal pay stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, but that's the problem with these days, right? Nothing is nuanced. And you can't have a nuanced conversation with some context. Like, I'm all for equal pay, right? So pay us the same. I don't see why they get treated differently. First of all, the argument for equal pay also was that they weren't staying in the same type of hotels, they weren't playing in the same field. The fact that they had to play a World Cup on turf and not grass, that's ridiculous. First, you know what I mean? That they're not getting the same playing conditions and stuff. Come on, that stuff. And per diem payments, you know, that's ridiculous. We should all be playing on the same field. All I'm just saying is that we have different CBAs. Our lawyers argue based on different pay structures. But I'm all for being for everybody paid equally. We're doing the same job. You get what I'm saying? And yes, they have to work harder to win the World Cup than we do. To get more, I guess, to get more, paid more. But then, you know, there's another conversation to be had. FIFA, you know. FIFA, the prize money for the men's and the women's are completely different. Like, it's not even close. It's a drastic difference. And, I mean, that's due to, I mean, revenue money, right? And more people just happen to watch men's World Cup than women's World Cup. I mean, what I'm saying right here is nothing that can be... it can be denied. Those are just facts. So there needs to be stuff happening with FIFA as well to invest more in the women's game and, you know, provide them with more investment so that they can also keep climbing up.
So in order to make more news and use you even more as a political pawn, should I just play for you? I don't know if you've heard our show, but what we have here and that we've heard that we've enjoyed a lot is Liam Neeson was speaking with many of the same sort of words, qualifiers, trying to have compassion about the issue. But then when he was asked a follow-up question by the Associated Press, watch what happened here. I think we need to end this with a little bit of laughter because we've been very serious. It's been very sad. So here's Liam Neeson saying some things about equal pay right up until it gets uncomfortable.
There's a lot of discussion about it and a lot of healthy and necessary discussion about it because the disparity sometimes is disgraceful.
How do you think we can move past that?
We're starting and it has to start, you know, and it's starting with these extraordinary actresses and brave ladies, and we as men have got to be part of it, you know. We started it, so we have to be part of the solution.
So would you take a pay cut to kind of equal things out?
No. Pay cut? No. That's gone too far.
So would you take a pay cut to make all of these things happen? This equality, utopian equality you speak of, would you take a pay cut? Controversial Alejandro Bedoya.
Controversial. Well, is this going to be controversial then? No, I would not take a pay cut. I just need to pay the woman more. That's what it is.
really admired what you did. Thank you for giving some voice to a whole lot of people who felt pretty voiceless, pretty helpless, and still remain pretty scared. Thank you. It was nice talking to you, Alejandro.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Dan. Likewise. And keep doing your thing over there.
That was a special bonus South Beach Sessions reacting to the news. We will be dark next week, but if you're new to the program because Alejandro Bedoya lured you here because you were interested in what he did and why he did it, there are more interviews here with an assortment of people inside and outside of sports, in entertainment, just interesting people that we like asking questions. Those usually aren't so much about the issue of the moment, but more personality defining and the roots of people that you might find interesting. We ask you to rate, subscribe, and review if you're interested in what it is that we're doing here with the South Beach Sessions. Our thanks to Alejandro Bedoya. We will talk to you again in a couple of weeks.